Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
I'm Lance Pillersdorf. I am one of the co-founders of Advertising Week Globally, and it's a great pleasure to be here in what's technically our 11th year, but our 10th in-person edition of Advertising Week Europe. So it's been an amazing run, the first of many decades, we hope. And so thanks for everyone for being here. I'm delighted to announce the first in a series of talent and influencer sessions today, thanks to our great friends at leading talent agency, YMU. Thank you, YMU. I know YMU works closely with many of the brands in this room on influencer campaigns and talent partnerships. They manage an incredible roster of talent from TV personalities to digital-first talent, podcasters, music artists, sports personalities, best-selling authors, and many, many more. Our next session is called Building Highly Engaged Communities Through Content, and I'm really pleased to welcome to the stage three broadcasters, authors, entrepreneurs, and incredibly inspiring individuals, Fern Cotton, Jake Humphrey, Giovanna Fletcher, and our great friend who's going to chair this session, YMU's commercial director, Leon Harlow. Thank you.
One Melissa.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Well, first off, thank you so much, Lance, for a very generous intro. And thank you all for coming. Fern, Jake, Giovanna, great to have you with us. I feel incredibly privileged to get to work with each of you week in, week out. And I know lots of the team do as well. Lots of them are here with us. So this session is all around building highly engaged communities through content. Each of you have done that in an incredible way through the brands that you've each built. So we really want to unpack that a little bit and share some of those insights with everyone here. And Fern, we'll start with you. So obviously, as many of you know, you've sort of grown up through the world of TV and radio. And, you know, you're one of the most loved, most popular TV personalities in the UK.
Sorry, Jake.
One of. But you're perhaps best known now as the founder and creator of Happy Place. And you founded Happy Place back in 2018. That's a very fast 6 years that's shot by.
Yep.
And it's been incredibly successful. I mean, you know, a chart-topping podcast with 110 million downloads, Sunday Times best-selling books, sell-out wellness festivals, scores of brand partnerships, literary imprints, and lots of other things. Take us back to when you first founded Happy Place. What was the original mission of the brand, and how has that evolved since then?
I don't think we had an original mission from the get-go, if I'm really honest. There was sort of lots of happy accidents at the start where I wasn't really sure where I wanted to take my career. I definitely felt there was a natural end to a chapter. And the sort of fetal beginnings of Happy Place started with a book called Happy, which was my first proper book and also my first chance, I guess, to speak authentically. I did to an extent on TV and radio, but you're always slightly capped by, you know, the parameters that you're working within. So I just thought I'd just be really honest and talk about my own mental health. And that seemed to not only feel really good for me personally, but connect with people. And then the idea for the podcast came about and we've just kept naturally expanding things. So I think we became much more considered about it and started critically thinking about what Happy Place was and how we might be able to grow it. Maybe a year in, and we realised there was a lot more potential than we'd first imagined. So, yeah, it was accidental at first and then slightly more considered down the line.
Yeah, amazing. And wellness and well-being are words that are bandied around a lot at the moment. And so much of what I think makes Happy Place really popular is making wellness and self-care accessible, inclusive, easy to understand, and creating a really open space for people to talk about their own mental health. How are some of the ways that you've achieved that with the brand?
Well, my thinking is, because I know what it's like to feel awful mentally, what you don't want is lots of sort of, you don't want too many options, and you don't want any bullshit language. You don't want to hear fancy terms that mean nothing. And you don't want there to be this magic quick fix. You want you just want to be heard, and you want to be seen. And I think you just want to feel okay. We're not like reaching for the stars here. It's not do this and you're going to feel euphoric. I think our messaging is always, don't we just all want to feel okay? And we've all got the tools to do that. We just forget what they are, and we need to all be in this together. Everybody's going through something, everybody, on varying degrees. So let's all be in this together and help each other through whatever it might be. And I think that feels like a really good grounded approach. Whereas I think sometimes wellness can seem very frivolous, and it's sort of surface level, or a bit light, like a sort of Diet Coke light, like, you know, do this and you'll probably feel okay. Whereas we're going, well, look, let's just get everything out on the table, look at it, see where we're at, and let's aim for, I'm going to just incrementally get through this, and we're all in it together. So I think it's getting rid of the bullshit language, taking things slowly, simply, making things totally accessible. And I mean, to everybody. Wellness can't be for a niche group of people that can afford it or live in a certain area of the UK. It's got to be for everybody. So we take great care, especially with, say, the festival, which is obviously our live event where you're interacting with the lovely community we've cultivated. So making sure we're catering for the deaf community, disability community, different ages, physical ability, etc., and making sure we put a lot of time and effort into that, so that wellness isn't just this thing for the sparkly people up here who can access it.
Yeah, no, and Jake, turning to you, I mean, similar to Fern, you've risen through through TV to become one of the most successful sports broadcasters in the UK, fronting Premier League coverage, Champions League coverage on BT Sport, the BBC's BAFTA-winning Formula One coverage, Commonwealth Games, Football World Cup, Cricket World Cup, Euros, Olympics, and list goes on. But you're perhaps also best known now for being the founder of the hugely successful podcast and community brand High Performance. And I'm sure many of us in this room know all about High Performance, giving a rare glimpse into the lives of highly successful individuals. And again, it's become a hugely successful podcast. You've got incredible guests on the podcast, most recently Arnold Schwarzenegger and Richard Branson and lots of others. Scores of brand partnerships and app, live tours, workshops, and many, many other things. Tell us a little bit about your kind of founding mission for High Performance and how that's evolved over time.
Yeah, thanks, man. Hi, everyone. I think the truth is, you know, when you say that, it always sounds amazing, and I'm sure you'll both agree. You think, is that me? Have I done all those things?
So great.
Yeah. Shit, I am so great.
So great.
But the truth is, it all came from quite inauspicious beginnings, really. I grew up in Norfolk in a little village just south of Norwich. I was fired from McDonald's at 18 for a lack of communication skills. I got an ENU for my 3 A-levels. And the only way to redo my A-levels was to go and ask the head of year if I could go back to the school. That was my mum. So that was a relatively difficult but quite easy conversation to have from my perspective. There was a bit of tragedy. I sadly lost my grandma to suicide when I was around that same time, around my A-levels. And life just felt kind of tough, right? And I remember a friend of my mum and dad's gave them a book. I said, give this to Jake. And it was by Susan Jeff. It's called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. It's the first time in my life as a kid growing up in a real rural setting that I thought, maybe anyone can do anything. I always believed until that point there were successful people and then there was people like me, and the two would never meet because they knew a secret that I didn't know. And then I was desperate to tell this story. But then I got a job on kids' TV with some slightly dodgy co-hosts, and I wasn't sure if I could tell the story then. And then at 28, I got the Formula One job, and I just had to get that right. Mm. You know, I was given a one-year contract to do that job, and I remember them. They said to me, "We'll announce it a week on Thursday, and at 10 o'clock." And Harriet, you know, rang me at 10:30 in tears. I said, "What's the matter?" She goes, "I've just been on the internet. Everyone thinks you're going to be shit." And I said, "Well, which website?" And she's like, "The BBC Sport website." And then eventually I left there to go and join BT Sport when they spent £1.5 billion to host Premier League and Champions League football. And my boss said to me a week before, "Are you happy with £1.5 billion resting on your shoulders?" So I always had huge sort of pressures and never had an opportunity to tell this story. And then I thought, finally, in my 40s, I'm going to do this. But then I also thought, the world doesn't need another bloody podcast, right? And then I rang Fern and she said Happy Place had changed her life. And honestly, if Fern hadn't told me that, I can promise you High Performance would never have happened. Mm. And I sit here now, 250 million views or downloads later. It's been a hell of a journey. And the best thing is the start, because the whole point of High Performance is that high performance is not achieving great things, earning a big salary, driving a fast car, right? If you listen to the podcast, you'll understand high performance is resilience. High performance is keeping going. High performance is dealing with setbacks and struggles. The most successful people are not the happiest people. Therefore, are they high performers? That's the question we come back to all the time. And the great thing about having that North Star is it informs every decision we make. So let's build an app because we want to get people closer to high performance. Let's create a foundation because young children in school are not learning these soft skills that they need to thrive in the outside world. Let's not put out episodes that we've done with people that are not helpful for others to listen to. Let's take out some amazing, juicy, salacious headlines, which a part of me wishes we'd have broadcast, because if we put that headline out, everyone will not see the true message. I mean, there's an interview coming out on Thursday that will go absolutely everywhere. We've cut out some big bits from that interview because they will become the story, and we don't want that to be the story. Mm. It's Mental Health Awareness Week, and that needs to be the story, and you'll see the interview on Thursday. But it's very helpful for us because it informs who we work with, who we partner with, who advertises on the show, the decisions that we make. And so I'm grateful for McDonald's, for sacking me.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
And Jake, you know, alongside High Performance, you've founded other very successful businesses, and Whisper Production is a great example of that, which you founded back in 2010.
Yeah.
You know, is now one of Europe's fastest growing independent production companies. Talk to us about some of the similarities and the differences between building those two companies, between building High Performance and building Whisper Productions.
Yeah. Great question. So Whisper, they're based out in Kew. We've got just shy of 300 staff, 4 or 5 offices around the world. You know, it was a big year this year, almost £100 million of turnover for that business. And I can't really take much credit for that. We've got a CEO that should take all the credit, a guy called Sunil Patel. But I think that in itself is a really important element, right? He is the son of a news agent in Twickenham, right? People like Sunil don't make it in television. So that North Star of his, feeling like people like him are undervalued, underrepresented, is a North Star for that business. So therefore, what do? We have scholarship programs with local colleges and universities. We give people who never get a chance a chance. We're 50% female. We're producing the Paralympics for Channel 4 in a few weeks. We're the first production company that want everyone behind the camera to carry a disability. Traditionally, it's been everyone in front of the camera can be disabled, and then we'll employ loads of able-bodied people behind the camera. It's not the right way to do it. Mm. So it's purpose-driven. Whisper is purpose-driven, and I think the success shows you can do the right thing as well as do things right.
Mm.
And High Performance follows exactly the same. I think the biggest key with High Performance, well, I think there's two, the consistency, right? Your audience need to realize you're going to be there for them all the time. And I think you two are great at that. You know, you're one of the OG podcasters, G, and that consistency that you've always been there for people is really powerful. I think the second thing is being ambitious. Mm. You know, these two aside, I'm not sure that there's a more ambitious podcast in the UK than High Performance. You know, we've just opened our own studios in central London. We've got a team of about 17 people. I don't even call it a podcast anymore. It's High Performance. It's a production house. We're producing amazing content. And I'm hopeful that it inspires other people to give it a whirl and follow their ambitions.
Amazing. Well, G, turning to you, so I mean,
you both is so good. Like, yes.
This is your moment. So in a similar way, G, you've had a hugely successful career across multiple platforms. You know, you been one of the most successful parenting influencers, best-selling author and actress, on TV, so many successful projects, your own show on CBeebies, going on to win I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, crowned Queen of the Jungle. Round of applause for that.
Yeah. After what they've done.
And I'm missing lots of things out. But as with Fern and Jake, you're perhaps best known to lots of us in this room for founding your really successful podcast and content community brand, Happy Mum, Happy Baby. That began its life as a book, didn't it, many moons ago. Tell us about the inception of Happy Mum and how that's grown over time.
Well, I was an actress and then I wasn't working, so I started writing books, which actually became a really good way of character build, using my ability to create characters and tell stories. I was writing fiction and listening to lots of podcasts, actually, before I started to do mine. But I loved the fact that these podcasts were about community, and they were talking about things that I wasn't having those conversations anywhere, basically, because being an author, you're on your own all the time and you don't talk to people. You create your world and you're talking to your characters, but you're so isolated. I'd written several books, and then I had a baby, and I realized online that everyone had been lying to me about what that experience was actually like. I thought it was going to be crisp white sheets, big smiles all the time, and endless hugs. And I was just bamboozled, basically, when I became a mum, because I was the most maternal person I knew. Seriously, like in every friendship group, I was maternal, and I felt so out of my comfort zone. And on book tours, people kept asking, will you talk about motherhood? Will you talk about motherhood and do your own book? And so many people had written books, and they were all experts in motherhood, it turns out. But I'd read those books. My baby hadn't. And therefore, I just wasn't going to work. So I just thought, look, at first I was like, no, I can't write about motherhood because I don't want another person to lay something out there that's just going to put more pressure on mums to do it right. But then I realized actually what I can do in the same way that I've been doing online, I can share openly and honestly. So my first draft of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the book, was literally just me going and sharing everything, every thought of not being good enough, every thought of trying to do the juggle and failing at both, the bond, miscarriage, PCOS, whatever it is, I chucked it all in, thinking I would reel it in and not share it. And then I just thought, actually, at the end, I was like, no, this is my motherhood journey and I want to share it. So I sent it out into the world. And it was the most amazing experience, going on that book tour, meeting other mothers, and literally having a room of everyone being completely together and just sharing those thoughts that feel dirty, actually, when you say them. They feel so wrong, but then you share it in a room and everyone's like, yes, that's how I feel that. It just felt the most amazing thing ever. And because I've been listening to those podcasts, I thought maybe there's a world where that could be turned into a podcast. But the book is all me, right, sharing my experience, me going on an hour a week about my experience. I don't know how entertaining that would actually be, so I asked other people to come on, and I knew that was a massive deal, because I know that I have shared openly, but that doesn't necessarily mean that other people would want to do that, especially when it comes to motherhood. And what I realized actually very early on is that when people are, especially sort of people in the public eye, when they're on those daytime sofas talking about parenthood, they are there to promote something. They're not there to talk about their parenting. They're not there to talk about their experience. So they want to move on really, really quickly. So all you'd ever get on those sofas are, it's amazing, it's great, best thing ever, because they can't say anything other than that, because otherwise that will be taken completely out of context. So I didn't know how I would get those guests. Emma Willis agreed to do the pilot. She's a great mate of mine. However, when I asked her, she didn't text me back for 3 weeks. So I just thought, oh gosh, this is where it's going to go. But then we did do the pilot and it was amazing. Fern, you're also on the first series. And it just felt so freeing to sit together and chat about parenthood. And what I realised is I realized really early on that Happy Mum, Happy Baby is the safe space to talk and to talk long form. That's what, you know, that's the special thing about podcasts. You're not asking people to be really concise with their feelings, which is a really good thing. You know, you're allowing people to explore and share the nuances. And I've just loved it. And it's just grown and grown and grown. And I think, you know, I started out life as an actress, and that, you know, that's storytelling. Writing books is storytelling. And actually what we do in podcasts, we help other people tell their stories. It's all storytelling.
It's really interesting because the way that you've built Happy Mum, Happy Baby, you've inspired so many people with influence to really open up in the way that you described. I mean, you know, Her Royal Highness Kate Middleton to Hollywood actresses like Jennifer Garner. I mean, it's an incredible list of people. And I feel like you're also constantly iterating with different ways that you can help parents. So for example, some of you may have seen G's launched a strand called Parenting SOS, which is a sort of a strand within Happy Mum, Happy Baby, which is helping mums and dads sort of navigating parenthood and giving them different tips against different challenges. What are some of the challenges that you feel sort of most, you have a heart to help parents with the most at this stage in the journey?
There's a few different things. One other thing is the village. I think we no longer have the parenting village around us. And that's really, really hard. And I think once everyone realizes that this is hard, because actually 100 years ago, you would have had a whole team around you to help bring up your child. Mm. And now you really don't. So actually I feel like podcasts are a great way of helping you be part of that community. And I think with the podcast, we have helped create that. But maternal mental health is massive, you know, and I think that kind of it's all one and the same. You know, we've got to look after our mental health, especially maternal mental health, because the leading cause of death in new mums is suicide within the first year. That's fact. So that should be the happiest time of their lives, but so many women are going down that route. Why? Let's look at that. Let's see if we can talk about whatever those issues are. So it's essentially helping people realise they are part of a community still. Mm. Doesn't matter how far away people are, if it's down a, you know, a computer screen or in your ears, you are part of the conversation still, wherever you are.
No, amazing. And I think for all three of you, you've built highly engaged communities at the heart of your brands, where people keep coming back because they feel they're being served by the content that you're giving them. What are some of the ways that you've managed to keep those audiences keep coming back and also advocating and bringing others into the community? Fern, I'll pass to you.
I think honesty is a big part of it. You know, whether that's me being honest about, you know, sharing about my own story to encourage others to know that you don't have to drown in shame if things aren't going brilliantly or you've been through tough times. But I think as a brand, we have to have that ethos as well, that there's always that level of honesty. And that means that we're going to unearth subjects that aren't talked about and bring them to the forefront. But also sometimes you have to put your hands up and say, oh, we got that wrong, whether that's internally or outwardly. And we'll try again. We'll do something different. That for me is the liberation of having my own little ecosystem. When I was traditionally broadcasting, you don't have that opportunity to do that. Mm. If something goes wrong, the show is cancelled or you're sacked and that is it. And in TV, sometimes you're sacked and not even told. And you just turn the telly on and go, oh, I guess I'm not hosting that anymore then, because someone else is doing it.
Okay. We've all been there.
It's all been there. Whereas with this, we go, oh, okay, that didn't quite work, but we can literally tomorrow try something different. Mm. And I think that constant feedback loop with the audience is so helpful, because you can listen to what's really needed and what is working and what isn't, and keep tweaking things. It doesn't work like that in traditional media. It's that doesn't work, we'll never do it again. This feels much more nuanced, and like we've got the time and space to really play around with things and fine-tune it and find new ways, new paths that haven't been forged before. So I think it's about really listening to the audience as well as communicating very honestly, and they agree.
We've had loads of conversations actually about how exciting we find this world of new media, let's call it, compared to where we were before, where you sort of feel so shackled by comparison. I think the trick for us has been to listen to the audience, right? So I mentioned briefly the High Performance Foundation. So we're taking the messages and the lessons from high performance. We're putting them into schools. We're already working with hundreds of teachers and thousands of kids. That came from messages from teachers telling us that the things that we're talking about and the things they're hearing are not being discussed in the classroom. So then it's like, well, how do we solve that problem for teachers? Instead of giving them more work to do, we'll do the work for them. So we've created a curriculum created by teachers for teachers. And we've got our first big fundraising event happening in a few weeks at the McLaren Technology Center. So we listen to people there. We listen to our audience when we realize that every time we put something on YouTube, it got amazing reaction. So we now have more people watch high performance than listen to high performance. Mm. So that's an area for us to really focus on. That's why we've just opened our first new studio, because how it looks is really important. We built an app because our audience was saying to us, I love listening to it, but I'm driving the car or I'm walking the dog or whatever, and I can't make notes. So we're building an app at the moment that is already released, and it allows you to save the information and sort of create your own playlist. And I love the phrase, hold your beliefs lightly, right? And I think sometimes when you create something, you hold on to it too tightly. You're like, this is what my podcast or my brand is. This is the direction it's going to go. It's not the right way to be. Mm. Listen to the community. Listen to the audience. Let them decide where it goes. And that is so bloody exciting. You know, we're on high performance. We're about 20% in the States outside the UK. Like, for us, that's amazing. For me, having only ever done stuff in the UK, that's incredible. So I'm very excited about where our audience decide our brand goes next.
Amazing. Gee.
All of that. But also, I think the audience is really important, and so are the guests. I can remember when we were filming The Baby Club, and one of the producers talking about Series 3 and being like, you know, because there are always new babies being born. Me being like, but can't they just watch Series 1 and 2? Like, this is a really weird... They're babies. Mm. But actually, what I've realised... In the same way with Happy Mum, Happy Baby, there are always new mums coming into the fold. And therefore, it's really important for all of us or new listeners. And it's important never to think that your message is everywhere. Because I can very easily think that everyone knows about maternal mental health. Everyone knows about everything that I'm talking about. They don't, because I am constantly talking in my pond, right? Whereas actually, it's really important to have a guest who's in a different pond, because then they can share that message as well. So it's important to constantly find those guests who are going to get that message spread further. That's what I think.
Mm, nice.
And all of you have had some unbelievable guests sort of come on the three podcasts. Would love to know who's a guest who's inspired you the most that has come on, that you sort of think, wow, what they said really has stayed with me and sort of changed my outlook in a certain way.
Oh my God, that's like the hardest question ever. I would say a couple spring to mind. One is an amazing Buddhist monk called Bjorn Nathiko Lindeblad, who at the time of our recording had about 4 weeks to live, and he had agreed, or he had reached out and wanted to give his sort of final message to several broadcasters. He had years and years of wisdom from being a monk, and then after his monastic life, he met his wife and had a completely different life, but went and did beautiful talks. And it was obviously one of the most moving conversations I've ever had in or outside of work. And there was something completely magical about it. And he talked about life and death in a way that I haven't heard someone talk about before. And I think his courage at facing death, I mean, he had no choice, was incredible. But also how he used that to just harness the beauty of every day and live in the moment, which sounds like a very cliched thing that gets battered about, but he didn't have the luxury of not doing that.
Yeah.
And that's really stuck with me. And then very quickly, coming up this Monday, we've got an episode with this amazing woman called Patrick Gagné, who's written a memoir called Sociopath, and she's a diagnosed sociopath. And she's also a therapist for sociopaths. And it was the coolest chat I've ever had, guys. So because I knew that she wasn't thinking, does Fern like me? What does Fern think of me? Like, she doesn't give a shit. She is apathetic. I stopped caring. And I was like, this is liberating. And then I started to wonder, why do I care so much? Does everyone in this room like me? Are they liking what I'm saying? And will I sleep tonight? Because I'll be worrying I said something stupid and my brain's going blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It was really freeing knowing that it doesn't have to be that way. And I'm not going like, I desperately want to be a sociopath, but there were parts of her personality which I could feel the liberation, and I felt it for that hour. You know, I think for all three of us, the beauty of doing this job, you know, and a part of each of our brands being the podcast or the YouTube episodes, is the variation of guests that you get. And you, every time you walk away going, oh, wow, I'd never thought about life like that. It's endless. And we get to do that every, we're like, we're so lucky.
My favourite episode is always the most recent episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, that was the best one ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Gorgeous.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, we followed the Princess of Wales's podcast episode with Isma Almas, who I knew nothing about before going into the recording, not really. She had a comedy show on that was going to be on after she'd recorded the podcast. I knew that she was from Pakistan, had moved over really young. I knew that she'd married her husband when she was 21, had two children, realised that she was a lesbian, so therefore they divorced. And then adopted a child with her wife. That's all I knew, of African descent, so of a different ethnicity to her. That's all I knew. And so, you know, when sometimes you've got a guest and you there's no research to be had. You know, you go in it with open ears and an open heart. And it was the most beautiful episode because it talked about, it was all about relationships and bonds. And so often I talk about bonds with people in terms of, you know, that bond that you might have with your baby when they're first born, because there's such a massive, there's so much put on that. In the films, you know, the baby is born and then the world just makes sense. For a lot of people, it's not that. But what was interesting with Isma is that she was talking about that with a baby that she was about to adopt. And she was worried about that bond being there. I just love the way that she expressed everything, to be honest. And it was a massive lesson in terms of the podcast to that's all we do, really. Wow. Go in, open heart, open ears, and listen. And actually, that's one of my favourite episodes, because so often, especially around then, people like to say, how are you going to follow that episode? With a really good fucking story. That's yes. It.
So we always ask the same question when we release an episode of High Performance. Is this valuable for people? So let me just share the three most valuable things I think I've heard on our show. We interviewed Mel Robbins.
You have
Robbins on your show?
No.
No, she loves brilliant. Chat. So she's like this amazing American author, speaker. And she wrote a book called The High Five Habit, where you high five yourself in the mirror every day. Mm. My co-host is a professor who grew up in boxing gyms in Manchester, and before she joined us over Zoom, he went, what the fucking hell is on? I said, well, ask her. So we started interviewing, and he said, can I just ask, like, I'm a bit cynical about all this stuff. And her answer was brilliant. She goes, how's cynicism working out for you in everyday life? I thought, what a fucking brilliant answer that is.
Being so, British.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the first big lesson. How's cynicism working out for you? You know, you can all be cynical about a conversation like this, or you can think, you know what, it's going to be 45 minutes whether I invest some time in it or not, you know, and very few people are looking at their phones, but only a couple of you.
Pointing them out.
But you have that choice. And really what she's saying is you've got the choice. You want to invest in your life or not. So I love that conversation. So the second one I would say was from Phil Neville, the former footballer and football manager, who probably gave us the best ever description of high performance, which is do the best you can where you are with what you've got. Nobody can ask any more of you than that. And the final one I would say, Johnny Wilkinson, which was an episode that kind of changed the game for our show, I think. And he said that for him now, doing the washing up is the equivalent of winning the Rugby World Cup. Mm. Yeah, that was our reaction. And when he explained it, he said, well, what are you doing when you win the Rugby World Cup? Using your body to achieve a goal. It's the same thing when you're doing the washing up. And it's society that decides one is more important than the other. Mm. And this idea of not letting society change the way you see yourself is a powerful message from high performance.
I love that episode. That was my favourite of yours.
Thanks. Other than the one that you were on.
Yeah, way better than me.
Yours was great.
It was so good.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
So, guys, we've got lots of brands and advertisers in the room who are thinking about their content strategies and how they nurture communities that are loyal and engaged and keep coming back. What are some of the learnings from your journeys in building content community brands that you would share with those brands in the room? Gee, I'll start with you.
I think it's always about the why. why are you creating something? We all know what our podcasts are. We all know what we're trying to do with those. So I think it's very easy to go, we're going to do this because that's a good person, or, you know, we want to, but actually why? What are you trying to say with what you're building? How do you want both people to feel? I think that there's some sort of key questions that just help you focus really on whatever's to whatever you're trying to create.
I think the world for us and the world for you is more exciting than it's ever been. My only question would be, are you being ambitious enough? And I think that the world is changing so fast and becoming so big and so exciting, it's about us all keeping pace with that. So no one's going to remember what you tried to sell them, are they? But everyone is going to remember how you made them feel when you tried to sell them that thing. And I think that that's really important when it comes to our show. Like, I really want to move away from talking about, sorry if you're in the room, Persia 1 week, Ford the next week, and VW the next week, because it doesn't do anything for us, doesn't do anything for the brands, it doesn't do anything for the audience. Like, what can we all do together that is really groundbreaking, really exciting, really different over a long period of time? Like, I love long partnerships. We've just signed a 12-month partnership with a brand. And the most exciting thing for me there is not the money they're going to pay us. It is the job that we can do for them and that they can do for us to then do something great for our audience. Mm. You know, so if you're in here and you're a purpose-driven brand, really think, like, how can we not just advertise with Happy Place or advertise on Happy Mum, Happy Baby or on mine? How can we partner? Like, how can we together come up with a really cool idea? And I think one of the frustrations I have sometimes is that a partner will come to you with a fully formed idea. Mm. And I think you're missing a massive trick there. Come to people like Fern and G and say, what do you reckon we could do that's really fun? You know, the money should be the last thing you think about. The audience should be the first thing that you think about. But podcasters, there was a recent survey, podcasters are the most trusted broadcasters on the planet now. Mm. YouTubers are the second most trusted. Most podcasts are on YouTube. So if you're working with podcasters and YouTubers, you're working with the people that the audience trust the most. You know, high performance audience listen to an average of 3.5 episodes a month. That's virtually every bloody episode we put out because of trust. So I think there's a huge opportunity for you to do something amazing.
Yeah, I would say trust is a big one. And I think that's, I guess we've all worked very hard to get an audience that do trust us now, which feels amazing. And I definitely don't take that for granted ever, that you create a safe space and that the audience trust that you're going to bring the right guest and you're going to tactfully talk about a subject that might be quite difficult to talk about. And I think that level of authenticity is, I mean, it maybe can be taken for granted by the audience because they're used to it. We've all done hundreds of episodes and they know that's what they're going to get. And I think that is such a key part of certainly what we do and the learning curve that we've had coming from different backgrounds and moving into this sort of brand arena, is that having that relationship with the audience is an absolute privilege. And it can feel like you're all in something together. And I think authenticity, which is, again, such an overused word, is essential. And people can smell bullshit a mile off these days. Like when we were growing up in the 90s, we'd believed everything. We're like, oh my God, everything's magical and amazing. And you sort of just believed the whole thing. Whereas people don't anymore. You know, all of the smoke and mirrors has gone and we know how things work to an extent. And I think that has to just always be kept in the forefront of our minds, that people don't want to be lied to. And most people, you know, probably always come from a slightly mental health skew. Most people need help in some way. We're able to provide as many free or low price resources as we can within Happy Place. But I think there's definitely opportunity to look at how we're helping people and how we're offering people, even if it doesn't have to be like super earnest help, but just putting a smile on someone's face or making them feel less alone. I think that's been the big learning lesson for me personally, is the things that I used to feel really ashamed about or embarrassed about, mortified about, or freaked out about are the thing that connects me most to people. When I have conversations with people about deep subjects or their stories, that's where we connect. We're not connecting in, oh my God, aren't we amazing? Look at all these great things. We're connecting at a place of pain or empathy and understanding each other from that point of view. So I think everyone needs a bit of help. You know, as I say, it could be as simple as just putting a smile on someone's face, but most people need a bit of a helping hand at the moment.
Amazing. Well, we've got time for one more question. I see the clock ticking down. So a bit of an inside scoop. So looking forward for each of your brands, you've got some really exciting projects in the pipeline. What are some things that you can tell us about what you'd love to achieve next, what you're excited about achieving next with the brand? G, I'll start with you.
First is just keep going with the podcast. Keep those audiences feeling like they're part of a community. Keep building the community. I think that's where my passion is to keep having those conversations. But also trying different things like subscription boxes and things like that. Basically, we're just testing out little areas, basically. We've done the lives and I absolutely love those. I would love to bring the lives back. I think we were really inventive when it came to COVID and doing things virtually. Having three kids does mean me on the road is very, very different nowadays. But I think in as many ways as possible, connecting to more and more people so they don't feel alone.
Amazing. Jake?
I think the thing that I'm personally most excited about with High Performance is that I feel like we're about 5% of the way through. And it sounds ridiculous, but I feel like we are only just beginning. You know, my ambition is to be the biggest performance brand on the planet. I also think we've got a really important job because we've become a safe space for men. Mm. And men are reaching out more than ever before. Men are asking for help more than ever before. But a recent study found that men are having suicidal thoughts 3 times more than they were in 2009. There's a massive issue. There's a big disconnect. And I think actually for a lot of men, you know, we feel like our fears and thoughts are not being addressed because they're almost being linked to the traditional opinion of a man about being strong and, you know, a bit dismissed. And I think High Performance has found a real opportunity to, you know, when we did our live tour, a lady actually stood up and said, I'm a bit disturbed by how many men are in the audience tonight. And I wish I'd said, well, would you rather they weren't here? Because men aren't talking and men are not sharing. And finally, they found somewhere where they feel safe, they feel vulnerable, they feel they can be open. So I'm very excited about what the future looks like for High Performance. And, you know, the great thing is, whatever CPM you agree with these two, we're a pound cheaper. So, I mean, there's a great deal to be done.
Love that. So competitive.
No, I'm really excited. I think G and Fern feel the same. I think, like, the world is endless for these kinds of brands that are there to make a difference and leave the world a better place than you found it. So regardless of whether you stick around and we all have a drink tonight and talk about doing a deal or whatever, I think the most important thing is just ask yourself, like, what footprint are you leaving as businesses and as brands? Like, what legacy are you leaving behind? Make sure it's a positive one.
Amazing.
I agree. I definitely feel like Happy Place is on the first rung of the ladder. And, you know, there's lots of dreams and ideas that are circulating. We started a book club recently, which feels like a really exciting endeavour. We have a book imprint, which is going beautifully, and we're publishing lots of gorgeous books at the moment. But I think books are an amazing way for people to learn and to grow. And our book club feels like the initial little sparkles or something quite important. We want to keep growing the festival, but slowly, incrementally, because it's got to remain a safe space for the people that turn up, and growing the YouTube side of things. There's another thing that I don't know if I'm allowed to talk, probably not allowed to talk about. No,
you're not allowed to
probably
talk
not
allowed to talk.
Okay, Leon, that was very stern. But we're launching something in June, which I think ties a lot of what we're doing together, which feels very cool indeed and is quite brand-led, if I'm allowed to say that. So yeah, we've got lots of things in the mix and it's just, you know, similar path to G and Jake, just making sure that we grow things, we're ambitious, but we do it in the right way. It's no rush and just, yeah, keep listening to our audience and seeing where those blind spots are because we've all got many.
Well, super inspiring. We'll draw it to a close there, but a huge thank you to Fern, Jake and G, and thank you to all of you as well.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website, europe.advertisingweek.com, for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcanda, the audio conference solution.